My name's Josephine Pembroke, and welcome to the wonderful world of Radio Gorgeous. Are you a people pleaser? You may not even know you're one, because according to author and psychotherapist Emma Reid Turrell, there is more to people than the pleasing saint-like image we all imagine. Cambridge University educated Emma is our guest today on Radio Gorgeous, and we're delving into the people-pleasing world, talking about her new book, Please Yourself, How to Stop Pleasing and Transform the Way You Live. Hi, Emma, a warm welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Absolute pleasure. First of all, let's have a bit of fun. Your book starts with a quiz to find out what type of people pleaser you are. Can you explain the different characters?
Absolutely. So this is one of the things that's sort of a little bit different about my take on people pleasing, because I think we probably all know a people pleaser. Maybe we're one ourselves. And normally we're taught to think about people pleasers as the ones who kind of want to make everyone happy and they just want to get it right and make things perfect. But that's just the tip of the pleasing iceberg. So I've come up with four different profiles. The first one, which I call the classic, is a bit of that way. So this is the one who they can nail the perfect birthday present. Any party they throw has no detail overlooked. They get it right. They never miss a date. They're always brilliant people to have around you because they really want you to be, really want you to be happy. And they're classics. They're classic people pleasers. But then there's this other type, which is called the shadows. The shadows are the people pleasers who they don't necessarily want to get it right for everybody, but there will be certain people in their life who they really want to please. So I talk about this in the way about someone who deflates themselves to inflate someone else. So they're often in the wings. They're the ones who make the perfect wingman or the number one, number two. And actually it can get quite competitive if you've got shadow people pleasers around you because they want to be the best. So you might notice that in those moments, they have to compete to be the best people pleasing shadow. So that's a kind of interesting dynamic. The third one, and again, I see this one a lot, is the one I call the pacifier. They don't so much want to get it right. They just don't want to get it wrong. So they don't want to please you as much as they want to not displease you. And that means they have to tread this very vanilla middle of the road where they don't put a foot out of line ever and they never make a mistake and they never upset anyone. So they're trying to keep the peace and not rock the boat. Then there's the fourth profile. And the fourth profile is one that just struck me suddenly when I started thinking about the idea for this book, because this is the people pleaser who doesn't think they're a pleaser at all. In fact, they just think they couldn't care less. They feel that this is the one who is just outside the pressures to be people pleasing. They don't care what people think. They don't care how they appear. But actually, the reality is sometimes these are the people who still feel the pressure to please, and the way they have learned to survive that pressure is to not give a fuck. And whilst that works brilliantly some of the time, there will be other times where they have to throw the baby out with the bathwater and opt out completely in order to not actually feel like they're being told what to do. So those are the four profiles. I saw you nodding.
Yeah. Well, I did it. And they say I got three for C and then four for D. So I thought I'm sort of like, probably a little bit, but hopefully a tiny bit more balanced.
You know what, though? I love that combination of the CD, because that's the pacifier resistor type. And I recognize that one as well. I empathize with that, because I think part of the reason the resistor actually appears in the end is when the first three profiles just don't work anymore. So we, in your case, maybe have really tried not to upset anyone, but actually when they still decide to be upset with you, fuck them.
Yeah. Also childhood, you know, if you think I'm one of four girls, so we had to take roles. So my role, you know, was the angry, don't give a damn rebel, you know.
Yes. So in a way,
you could look at your family and see the dynamics in, you know what I mean? Like you say, the character we haven't, well, not character, your therapy in the book, she wanted to please her dad, you know. We've often got someone in our family that we're particularly... Yeah,
absolutely. And especially if you've had one person in your family who slotted nicely into that overachieving, effortless, classic pleaser, there's no room for another pleaser to join them. So actually you find someone else who might come in instead and try not to rock the boat, and someone else who maybe comes in a bit like you and says, I don't want to play.
Yeah.
And if one parent is occupied being pleased by one of your siblings, you might find you turn your attentions towards the other one.
Yeah. No, it's so fascinating. So what are the kind of classic signs? Because I think people, you said those types, but what are the signs that you're one? You know what I mean? What should we be conscious of?
Well, I mean, let's start with the other end this time then. The one I think that we can get really conscious of is the one where someone says, I don't think I'm a people pleaser at all. And that, I think, as soon as you've stated that, I would be encouraging you to just get really, really curious about just how true that is, or whether actually that is your defense against people telling you what to do and how to be. So that's one. So if you get a reaction that says, nah, this doesn't mean me, maybe that's a part of you that's doing a bit of resistance. And then I think you can look at some of the others, and they manifest a bit more clearly. So the pacifier, the one that doesn't want to put anyone out, that doesn't want to upset anybody, maybe for them, anger is something that's particularly scary. So you might notice that you have a reaction if someone's unhappy with you that makes you start really overworking and really trying hard. Or sometimes, I think what's great about a pacifier is they end up having a lot of conversations with themselves in the shower. They're the ones who in that moment are suddenly running through the events of the day. Did I upset someone? Was that okay? Did I do that wrong? Or should I get back in touch and try and make things better? So quite often their process continues after the event. The shadows and the classics, I mean, the classics are the ones who are, well, they're quite often beautifully turned out. They're quite often the ones who never miss a trick. Maybe their house is immaculate, or maybe their lists are endless.
What about, that sounds like a perfectionist. What are they also selfless? Because I know someone that's very sort of like just never, oh no, that's a shadow one, isn't it? Shadows.
Could well be. It could well be, because the shadow might be the one who's actually just making sure that there's none of their own ego in the situation at all. I think what's interesting about the classic is they want the pat on the head. The shadow doesn't even notice that there's a pat on the head to be had.
So, sorry, number one, is that the kind of goody-goody who was always teaching
yes.
pet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I couldn't stand.
Yes. So let's be honest, there probably is a sibling. I mean, I've already picked that one up, right?
Exactly. So that's the kind of one who was always like, won all the prizes at school, everybody loved, the most popular girl, you know.
Yeah, on at least on the outside, because of course on the inside, they're actually nowhere near as secure as they look, or they're nowhere near as popular as they might appear, because they're having to work so bloody hard for that popularity. It's far from effortless, but often it can look that way because they've got really good at it. The shadow's the one who's hanging out with that person going, you're amazing, you're brilliant, keep going.
The worshipper. Yeah. God, this must change your collecting children from the school gate issues, you know.
God. Totally. I think that's where a lot of the issues appear.
Oh, brilliant. So how and why is people pleasing related to the emotions?
Great question. So people pleasing is really about managing other people's feelings. So other people's needs, other people's emotions, and trying your best, if you're the people pleaser, to keep other people okay so that you can get the reaction from them that feels safe for you. What it's not about, and what the whole book is about, is reclaiming your emotions for yourself. So we get to that point where we say, hang on a minute, I have spent so long wondering and worrying if this person dislikes me that I haven't even stopped to ask myself if I dislike them. So it's our own feelings that we need to come back to, even if that risks loosening the reins slightly on other people's feelings. And I guess I use that quite intentionally, because part of my understanding of people pleasing is that it isn't about being too nice or easygoing or selfless. In fact, it's actually about trying to organize other people's emotions so that we feel safe.
Okay. And also maybe recognized as well, you know, like,
yeah,
appreciated, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, the doormat wife, you know what I mean? It's like, if I'm just good, if I do everything for him, if I just please him all the time, he'll stay with me, he'll love me, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, which I guess back to that word safe, right? That's, even if it doesn't look like that safety anymore, because maybe we're grown adults, but actually if we're having to adapt our behavior so that he'll never leave us, that's about safety.
Right. And then also wanting a friend or wanting to be friends with the popular one. Yeah, it all makes sense. You're all, it's so that you're validating yourself, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you know, and in a way, this is kind of why it's so important, isn't it, that we understand it's not about, if someone's doing that, they're not doing that from a position of power. They're doing it because actually they don't feel like they belong in the pack, if you think of us as social animals, without it. So they're kind of adapting, not because this is manipulation, but actually because the risk for them is they get rejected. And as humans, rejection is kind of the worst thing we can have. We don't want to lose our place in a group. That's what we are, group animals. Sometimes though, we need to realize that actually we can be a bit more self-selecting about the groups we want to be part of. So we don't have to be part of any and every group. Back to the school gates.
Fascinating. God, it's so interesting because it's not just people pleasing at all. It's about everything, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's about everything.
So what makes a people pleaser? Are they born or are they created?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think probably much like most people, I think it's a bit of both. But I think what I notice is the chain of people pleasers. So if you've got a people pleaser in your parents, you might well find that actually what they model to you is, here's how to people please. So you pick that up. That's the nurture piece, right? But there's also a lot of stuff that goes on before we're even born that determines the culture we're going to be born into. So maybe there were rules in your family around gender or around certain feelings. Lots of families grow up and maybe anger was okay in this family because that was passionate. But in this family, actually, anger was absolutely off limits. But it was okay to be scared or sad. So you start to kind of pick up these cultural cues. Then as you grow up, of course, you get the experience of your own parents. And the better you get at something, e.g. people pleasing, the more praise you're going to get for it. So then you start to become known as, oh, you're so good at writing those thank you letters. And, well, aren't you lovely because you clear the table? Of course, these things have a place. But actually, if we start to equate our identity with being pleasing, we seek out that praise. That's natural. We suddenly find ourselves as grown adults in a job where we're still looking for that same pat on the head.
Could we feel resentful to others because of this underneath?
Massively. You know, you were saying about what can we look out for as the symptoms? How can we spot if we're a people pleaser? I think resentment is right up there, because resentment is the unfelt symptom of anger. It's that kind of just simmering away at the edges, feeling a little bit resentful, a little bit resistant, a little bit bitter, because what we've done, we haven't realized it, but what we've done is actually set ourselves up. We've trained people to expect us to please them, so they do. But then actually when we find that we try and cash out, maybe at the end, we're sort of, you know, I've done this for you and now I'd really love to ask for your help. We don't get it back because, of course, the nature of a people pleaser is they attract people who want to be pleased. So we can end up with that quid pro quo that we thought we were setting up that never materializes. And then we can feel really resentful and then we can become resistors.
What if you're with someone that you're a people pleaser to them, but they don't give it back to you, but they're interested in people pleasing for lots of other people, not you?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's such a good observation as well.
Chains. This is the chain, isn't it?
This is the chain. This is the chain. Well, you look back at the first chain, right? The chain was maybe mum people pleased. And so you try to take care of her because she's not looking after her own feelings. So you've got to make sure that she's okay by keeping her okay. But actually, she's got one eye on her mum because she had to start people pleasing her. So you end up with this chain of people pleasers where everybody is outsourcing their emotional okayness to someone else and getting busy on someone else's.
And never feeling fulfilled themselves, because they're never, you know, because the whole thing about people pleasing is you'll never get there. It's an ongoing journey of self kind of torture in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the point about they'll never get there, one of the reasons they'll never get there is because whilst this might not be conscious, in fact, I think it very rarely is, sometimes a people pleaser believes, or they've just picked up by osmosis, that to do anything other than people please. It's really selfish. So the reason they'll never get there is because they have a code inside them that says, you don't deserve it. This isn't for you. You know, other people before yourself. That's why you'll never get there. It's that code that needs updating. The one that says, I'm not saying me first, I'm just saying me too.
Right. Very interesting you say the word me too, because as you were talking all the time, I was thinking, that is the way women, girls, are brought up in our society anyway. It's always that we should look nice, be sweet, be kind, be pander to men. You know, well, I'm older than you, probably 20 years. And that's exactly how, because I was seen as the bad one in the family, because I realized, in fact, this week, it's all because I had anger issues. So that was seen as bad.
Ah, but there you go. Did you have anger issues, or were you the only one who felt anger?
I had anger issues, definitely. I was the only one that showed it anyway. You know,
yeah.
I was the
and
one
this
that screamed shouted. So I was the bad one because of that.
Yes. But I mean, this would be a whole other session.
I didn't give a damn, because I was like anti-people pleasing, because, you know, I was the bad one. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to have an identity that's different. But this is why I suppose I held us on that, was it anger issues? Because, you know, you can probably imagine in my line of work, I hear people all the time who tell me they've got anger issues. They don't have anger issues. They didn't have permission to feel angry. They got told those were anger issues. But quite often they were actually feeling the anger on behalf of a whole family, a family who weren't owning their own anger. So the black sheep of the family is often the one who is just calling bullshit on the dysfunction. But that's not a safe place to be when you're little. So you end up running a narrative instead that says, I'm the angsty one, I'm the difficult one, I'm the fly in the ointment. And we can actually spend decades undoing that self-narrative and saying, oh, I was just me. And you know what? I actually think I had some of the emotional awareness that maybe there wasn't going on around me.
Fantastic. So actually, it's actually emotional awareness of the person that can be more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a place I absolutely understand, you know, there are problems with anger. I suppose I see it slightly differently as rage is a problem. Rage is violent, it's destructive, it hurts others. Anger is really healthy. It's a unit of energy for change. It just tells us when something's not working for us. And in our culture, you're absolutely right. Females are often conditioned out of feeling angry. They're allowed to cry if someone upsets them.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to say.
If you use that as a tool.
Yeah, if it's the only tool you've got, you've got to use it.
Yeah, yeah, I see. But that's why they do, because it makes males feel helpless.
And it diffuses the anger. And, you know, for a pacifier, for instance, anger is kind of like love is the absence of anger. But of course, that's not true. So for many women as well, they go on to have relationships which they believe to be healthy, loving relationships just because there isn't anger. But that's not the recipe for a happy relationship. Actually, healthy, safe, respectful anger is really important. We need to have conflict to say, this doesn't work for me, this doesn't work for me, let's negotiate. And sometimes females are trained out of that negotiation. So they're taught to receive love as it's offered, or be grateful, or it's the thought that counts. But it's not the fucking thought that counts if someone's mistreating you or abusing you or disrespecting you. It's the behavior, that's what counts.
So fascinating. I mean, I found my anger has been brilliant in career-wise, because I've used it constantly to self-start, to pioneer, to have, you know, to be brave, to do things before everybody else does, to be outspoken, you know, so that's been brilliant. But obviously I've still deep down think I'm a bad person because of childhood, you know, so it's quite tricky for me, you know.
Yeah, I think it is, because you're trying to run those two scripts at the same time. One, which is saying, you know, and this is where we sometimes find people pleasing gets, it's like a straddling position, because you're right, the anger is really healthy and really helpful and it triggers change and it's got a lot of momentum there, but our underlying script shames us for it.
Yeah.
So we can never feel really good about it.
Yeah. Whereas men can own anger. They can, you know, I mean, anger's their driver, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's.
Well, again, maybe it was the one they got permission to do. So that's the one they've got available. So they use it. But so many of the men that I see are really needing permission to feel some other stuff too. Some permission to feel scared or sad.
And that's why there's more suicides now than any other time in history. Yeah, because...
Well, interestingly, it was men that actually triggered the whole book, because it was realizing that people were coming into my consulting room who were absolutely, you know, in this case, resistors, having really tried to believe that they didn't care. And they really fucking cared, you know, but they didn't have the language or the permission. So they would go down, you know, maybe if I was kind of make a generalization and a stereotype, they would go down to the pub and they would have a beer and they'd hide behind the football with their mates and they would distract themselves out of how they felt, because actually there wasn't a space where they could say, my business is in trouble, or my marriage is failing, or my mum has died.
No, they had to be a lad at all times. They had to be the joker, the one that everyone, you know, they're so much more pack animals in us in that way, that they have to, yeah, I'm a great guy, you know, all that. So we can go into a corner and burst into tears and say, oh, I'm happy to our friend.
Yeah, we can reach out. Well, we have friends. I think that's the big difference, isn't it? You know, of course, again, it's a generalization, but a lot of men that I work with wouldn't have the kind of friendships that I have, that I rely on.
They have mates.
They have mates.
Yeah.
You know, and mates are great when the going's good, but when the shit hits the fan, maybe you need more than a mate.
But also it's like, how do they change the gear of the relationship from being matey to being vulnerable?
Yeah, and that is a huge risk, isn't it?
Yeah, because someone might even laugh at him, you know, or say, God, you're a bit weird, mate, you know, or something.
Yeah, because this is what we do, right? We shame people into being like us again. That's the danger. That's kind of where prejudice comes from. The fear of someone's doing it differently has to get somehow kind of brought back into line with a nice quick whip of shame. So that whole idea of, you know, telling men to man up, just as a bit of a kick so that they'll come back to this way of behaving that's the male code. I think it's changing. It's just, you know, it's going to take some time.
It is. Also, I also think it will change, but also physiologically. I mean, you know, men and women are different. You know what I mean? I mean, we're going to try our hardest to be as equal as possible, but, you know, there just are traits sometimes which do override. People please are scared of being judged.
I think it's the people pleaser's nemesis, isn't it? It's that idea that I'm going to be judged and found lacking or wanting, or I'm going to have failed in someone else's eyes. When we think about what people pleasers need to do, being judged, that's okay. But hearing someone's judgment as just exactly what it is, another person's point of view, run through their own filter from their own conditioning, and no more important than your own judgment. And often a people pleaser has stopped self-judging in good ways and bad ways. So for instance, a people pleaser might just behave in ways that are acceptable to other people and not actually stop and say, well, hang on a minute, is this who I want to be? Equally, when they get a negative judgment from someone else, they might lack the self-esteem, because they've outsourced it and made it others' esteem, the self-esteem to say, well, I am actually okay with how I've handled this situation. So judgment is inherent to us being humans. We're supposed to constantly be evaluating what we're doing and working out what we need to do next. It's just self-judging, self-monitoring, as opposed to leaving that, you know, in the hands of someone else, which strikes me as a kind of a pretty unsafe place to be.
Now, this is quite a strange question. Can people please be a form of control?
Yes. Is the short answer, you know, because this is where, and again, when we're kind of thinking about maybe family relationships, if a child grows up and they realize that actually they can organize the way someone reacts to them by behaving in certain ways, why wouldn't they? They're going to do that. You know, a child is aiming to feel secure and consistently safe. If they've worked out that by, you know, being extra good or extra compliant or super polite, what they get back is this positive feedback. That is manipulative, right? That's, I'll do this because I'll get that. It just doesn't come from a malicious place. I don't believe that people pleasers do it because they've got this whole repertoire of options and they happen to choose to deploy people pleasing. I think it's because it's their only option. It's their last resort way of creating a situation around them that feels okay. So it's a kind of, it's an interesting one because I think it is control, but it's control with really good reason. You know, by the time we've done this, we're probably 6 years old. So we're trying to control an environment to keep it safe for us at six. I get that. And I quite often say to people pleasers, you know, I really want us to say thanks actually to that part of you that's helped you until now. They've done it with best intentions. It's just that we might know some stuff now that you didn't know then. Maybe we can look at that.
Okay, so we've got all the characteristics. We know, you know, we've learned a lot about the psychology behind it. How can we change, which must be the hardest thing of all?
Totally. I mean, I think, you know, change generally, it comes in stages. So we have to have awareness first. We have to actually notice that this is a problem. And part of my my message is really about recognizing that the problem isn't the one that gets written up frothily and flippantly as one of being kind and nice. It's not that you're super sweet. It's actually that you lack some agency and potency yourself to make your own decisions based on your own feelings. So the first thing I'm always trying to do is say, well, let's just call this what it is, which is, you know, a way of trying to organize how someone else reacts towards you to help you feel safe. Let's call it that, rather than I just can't say no.
Yeah,
once we've called it that,
yeah.
Totally, right? So we know that if it was as easy as not caring what people think, we'd all have done it by now. So we have to kind of also respect the fact that this isn't easy. This isn't easy, otherwise you'd have done it. What I'm always encouraging people to do is get back from this idea of how do they feel? How did you make them feel? How are they responding to you? And get back into your own body and how do I feel? You know, how do I feel in this situation? Because I need to know how I feel to know what I need. And once I know what I need to keep it my responsibility to work out how to get it or give it to myself. So there's a kind of internal process that goes on. The big lesson, I guess, is about where to start with this stuff. So I would never encourage someone to go directly into their highest risk, highest value relationship and launch a whole new please yourself persona. I would probably say that, you know, if your work is paying your rent right now, or if you're still living with your parents, or if you're in a relationship, and actually this is going to be difficult for the other person, start at the edges and practice in the supermarket, putting yourself front and center, making sure that your needs get met. Practice with
tell us how you do that, Emma.
Okay, so take this example, right? This is this is the way I put it in the book. It's that moment, and I love this idea because we can all spot the little minutiae of how we people please. And I could, you know, anyone who's listening now could probably think, what was the last thing I did that was a people pleasing thing? Or what am I about to do straight after I listen to this that is going to be a people pleasing pattern? Because we've got them, they're all the little things, you know. Oh, I haven't replied to that text message yet, and what must they think? Or oh, I said I wouldn't go to that thing, and I really should go, shouldn't I? And oh, I bought a birthday cake for my daughter, I didn't bake it. Whatever it is, you can find it and recognize that actually, okay, let's start at the outer edges. Imagine a set of circles, and there's a ring around the edge, and in the ring around the edge are the people who, they don't matter in the grand scheme of things. And maybe that's the place that you can go into the supermarket and you're standing in the queue and you're about to pay for your shopping and you forget something. Are you really going to bag your shopping up and go back around the supermarket again, which I have done myself? Or are you really going to be there and apologize profusely to the whole queue and say, I'm so sorry that I'm going to take an extra 30 seconds of your life, but I need to go and get a loaf of bread, whatever it is. See what happens instead if you just allow yourself to have needs in that moment and act from a place that feels really appropriate and say, sorry, I forgot my bread. Are you guys okay? Are you okay to wait 30 seconds? That's okay. And you can try it with friends. Maybe you have a girlfriend who, you know, would respond really well if you said, listen, I'm going to try out some of this please yourself stuff. Can we have a little pact where I can text you and say, this is the kind of thing I normally say yes to, but deep down, to be quite honest, I'm actually feeling like saying no. And is that okay? And can we talk about it? You know, call it out, show your workings out rather than doing it all in your head. and let them come back and tell you how that felt, and vice versa, because you can help people pleasers too by saying, hey, listen, stop, tell me what's really going on. When you get a bit of evidence that says you're still acceptable, then you can come into the next circle. That might be the one that's about work. Then you can come into the next circle. That might be the one that's about a partner. Then you can come into the next circle. That might be the one that's about your parents. Some people won't even get as far as the family of origin because they don't need to anymore. It's not part of their daily life. But they would love to make a change at work. They would love to be able to have that conversation with the boss that says, you know what, you keep offering me these opportunities, but actually it's this thing I want to do. So it's all about kind of making it personal. It's a direction of travel. It's not a destination. You pick where you want the change to happen. For lots of women, and again, it's a generalization, sometimes that's within friendships. You know, I just want to have a friend where I can actually just say, I don't really feel like talking today. Is that cool?
Yeah.
And hear something back instead of what they might fantasize about, to actually get something back that goes, yeah, I mean, I was feeling like that last week. So great. Maybe we need to change.
Yeah, stop the pressure.
Yes, yeah. Take the pressure off yourself, and in doing so, model to everyone else that they can take the pressure off themselves.
Fantastic. God, it's so brilliant. So impressed, Emma. So, lastly, tell us about you, Emma. Which people pleaser are you and why?
Oh, I can absolutely point to different points in my life, and I've done all of them. And I think, you know, back to that idea of we do what we need to get through the night. And when we're young, particularly, we haven't really worked out how we want to do things. So I can absolutely clock that I would have been a child who really tried to get it right for other people and got good at it, and heard a lot of times, you know, oh, well, you can rely on Emma, she'll help. And that whole adage of, if you want to get a job done, give it to a busy woman, there's a kind of a feeling around that that seemed to just mean people who needed stuff gravitated towards me. It just so happened that when I got to about my mid-20s, I had a moment of realization. I thought, hang on a minute, I think I'm actually burning out here and something needs to change. You know, I have been through these kind of ricochets where I've then gone to a really resistor place and had to opt out entirely for a point, you know, time to time, and just say, yeah, leave me out of it. Now I think I get those whiffs, those little kind of signals that just say, you're saying yes to too much. And the big change I've made now is to recognize, do you know what? I can say no, not because I'm too busy, but because I don't want to be too busy. I don't have to get to that point before I'm allowed to say no.
Very good. And how's it with your inner intimate relationships? How's the people pleasing going there?
Well, nowadays, I suppose, you know, I think about my relationships in my life, really. They're, my husband, he's kind of well used to this constant kind of poor man, this therapist who comes home and says, hang on a minute, is that what we actually think? Are we being really authentic here? But it's all kind of grist for the mill now, and, you know, with a gin and tonic, it's okay. But with my kids, I think that's been a kind of a real experience for me, because they're 10 and 7 now, and I have gone through phases where I'm desperate to get involved, you know, when one of them's upset about something or didn't get invited or, you know, didn't get picked or something went wrong. And I want to come in. I want to fix it, because of course I do. It hurts me when they're in pain.
Every pain your child feels. Yeah.
Yes. And someone once said to me, you're only ever as happy as your least happy child. I thought, oh, that's so true. But now I can absolutely see that the thing that maybe I needed to learn was that you can feel sad and disappointed and still be okay. And that feeling comes and it goes. It might give you a message. It might tell you, you know what, this wasn't for you. Or it might tell you, you know what, if you really wanted that thing, we probably need to do something more about it. But actually stepping in and trying to protect our kids from feeling sad isn't the answer, because it just leaves them so ill-equipped for life. So that's probably where I notice it most. I'm desperate to come in and kind of, you know,
that's kind of over-mothering that.
I think so. And I think, of course, it comes from good intentions. And in a way, in part, at least, it's because for those mothers who maybe overmother, maybe they don't like the feeling that they get when their child is unhappy. But that's not for their child to resolve, right? By looking kind of happy with something or never being sad. Actually, that's kind of on us. We have to we have to work out. And I might have to go and cry on a friend's shoulder to let my 7-year-old cry on mine and not jolly her along or cheer her up, because actually that does her a disservice.
Let's just talk about feelings once more before you go. So if anxiety comes, or worry, or fear, or all the things that we're trying to avoid being people pleasers, how should we manage our emotions?
Well, emotions are, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? But emotions, they are a friend. They are literally designed to evoke motion, the nature of the word. They are designed to bring about an action. Once we've brought about the action, the feeling will pass. But not knowing that, not having evidence of that, is the bit that makes us feel scared of them. So if you were hungry right now and you had a sensation, you would be able to interpret that maybe and go make yourself a sandwich. The feeling would go away if you took the action. If you looked at your watch instead and said, well, I can't possibly be hungry because it's, you know, it's not time for lunch, or I only just had breakfast, or I'll just have a glass of water, the feeling can't go away. It hasn't been resolved. And it's the same for our emotions. So if you feel scared or sad or angry, these are feelings that are designed to tell us that something needs to change, you know. And there's a kind of golden rule to them, which is that anger is about change. What do I need to change? Fear is about seeking safety. You know, in what way do I need to look for safety here? Maybe I need to check out whether there's a risk, but maybe I actually need to tool up right now so that I don't have to feel afraid. If I'm sad, the action urge is often to actually withdraw and heal and make a bit of meaning about what was important about that situation so that you know what to look for next. When you can understand what the actions are, making a sandwich, not drinking a glass of water, and not shaming yourself for it or talking yourself out of it, the feelings will go away by themselves. They're only there like a traffic light to tell us what we need to do next.
What about anxiety?
Well, anxiety is an interesting one because, at least in my understanding of anxiety, it's kind of like a cover-up feeling. It's a feeling that we notice, but when I'm working with a client who's really anxious, I'll often say, so if you weren't feeling anxious right now, what would the feeling be? And often we can get to that point of thinking, ah, that anxiety is kind of like the bridge between how I wish things were and how they are. And I notice this kind of uncomfortable feeling when I can't accept things are as they are, but I'm not yet able to make the change. So sometimes when we're feeling anxious, again, I'm going to make a generalization here, but in some of the females I work with, there's actually anger. There's something that needs to change, but without the self permission or the societal permission to make a change, we're left with only the kind of societally acceptable feelings of benign fear and dismissible anxiety. And actually, when we look underneath that, okay, if I didn't feel anxious right now, how might I feel? I'd actually feel really pissed off. Okay, let's talk about that.
Fascinating. Listen, everybody, you've got to go out and buy Emma's book.
Now you've heard please do.
You got to read it as well. So the book is Please Yourself, How to Stop People Pleasing and Transform the Way You Live. It's by Emma Reed Turrell. It's published by Fourth Estate, and it's out today.
It is out today. What a special day.
At least you're having fun lockdown, one of the only few people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to find your fun where you can, haven't you?
Well, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming to Radio Gorgeous, and I'll hopefully see you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been such fun. Lots of love.
It has. Thank you, too.